Thanks, everybody, for coming to People's Rights and our free speech forum. We're going to have an excellent speaker today. Her name is Dawn Berry, and she's going to be talking to us about becoming a national and the advantages of doing that as opposed to remaining a citizen. So we should have a fascinating talk and a deep dive into the differences between a national and a citizen. So one of the things I wanted to talk about for People's Rights is that the reason we're doing all these meetings and the reason we're having all these excellent speakers is so that we can empower our members to resist and overcome what the bad guys are doing. So we're trying to educate people on how to reclaim their rights, and that's really what today's topic is specifically about, is reclaiming your rights that you have been misled to believe you have as a citizen. Well, they've tricked us. So Don's going to talk about that today. But more so than that, we've got an archive now that's really growing, and that is really a resource for all our members to look at and learn from and empower themselves on fighting back and reclaiming their rights. For example, one of the rights that you have is to question your accusers in a court of law if you're accused of something. So there's a lot of advantages to becoming a national if you end up going to court. Let's say you get pulled over for a traffic ticket. If you're a national, you're really no longer in their commercial jurisdiction, and they don't know how to handle you. So it's a nice way to prevent them from being able to seize your money, which is what they're really after, of course, with the tickets. But all our speakers, going back now 3 months, have been trying to give us knowledge that we can use to reclaim our rights and reclaim our country. And, you know, it's important to realize that right now people are literally dying due to lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge about the injections, lack of knowledge about what's going on in relation to this so-called pandemic, which I call a fraud-demic. Please do go to our website and look at the previous speaker archives on the People's Rights Newsroom and take a look at some of the talks there, because you're going to learn a lot and you're going to pick up a lot of knowledge about how to defend yourself. And what our group's all about is defending each other, protecting each other's rights. So if you're a member of People's Rights and you're in a situation where your rights are being violated, you can call the area assistance, and we will put out an alert to our whole membership. And then people can respond and help you with your situation. So it's awfully difficult to defend yourself if you're alone and you're surrounded by, say, hostile staff at a store or something. They're trying to kick you out because you won't wear and can't wear a mask. So that situation has happened quite a bit. We had a lady that went to the library in Los Angeles, and she was accosted by a security guard, and the security guard got right in her face and threatened her with pepper spray. So she called People's Rights, and we showed up, and by the time we did show up, the situation was resolved, but we went back the following week to the library in Los Angeles, and we confronted the assistant head librarian with that issue, and We made some waves and got some real attention drawn to this issue. And I don't know exactly what happened to that security guard, but I don't think he's there anymore. because we've gone back a couple times and we haven't seen him. So there you go. But anyway, today Don is going to be talking about becoming a national and what that means. While I'm at it, can any nationals that are here already raise your hand, please? Okay, so we've got three, four nationals. Okay, so I'm going to let Don explain what a national is, but I'd like to thank everybody for showing up. And is there anybody that's here at People's Rights Sunday meeting for the first time? Could you raise your hand? Anybody? Okay. Well, then, all right, Isabel, tell us how you found out about us. How did you find out about us? Okay. So she got an alert from the People's Rights System, and therefore she's here. we'll get this started. But Don has passed out some paperwork that she's going to be talking about. So if you don't have one of those, let us know. They're on the back table back there. But without further delay, I'm going to introduce Don Berry, and thank you very much, Don, for coming.
All right, guys, can y'all hear me? All right, cool. There we go. Okay, so you actually have had a couple of people already tell you the basics of what it is to be a national and becoming a national. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you further. Being a national is great. Having your citizenship is great. However, that only covers jurisdiction, okay? There's so much more, and these rabbit holes go very, very, very deep. It isn't the fact that you are a national that's going to get you out of this stuff, okay? It's, can you stand on your square and explain to the officer or the judge or whoever, the corporate person, who you are? Because if you can't do that, don't become a national. It's not going to save you. You're going to think it's going to save you, and it's not. You need to know who you are. That's the first question you need to ask yourself. For me, I see myself as a sojourner here on earth. I am a citizen of heaven. I am just here basically temporarily, and my goal is to help as many people as possible, to be the best Christian that I can, and to exert my rights where my rights should not be alienated. So, sui juris, I know you guys can't see it, but sui juris, this is something, a word that you need to learn what it means. I did these like little cards, and I do flash card type stuff to help me know a word and to know the definition of a word. I recommend that you get these little index cards and start creating flashcards for you, because you're going to need to know like UCC codes. You're going to need to know like all this legal jargon, because when an officer pulls you over, you can't just go, "Oh, I'm a national." And he's not going to go, "Oh, okay, I'm going to let you go now." If anything, he's going to go, "Okay, what are you, one of those sovereign citizens?" And sovereign citizen has a very negative connotation in our government. Okay, they have watchdog groups, departments that specifically look for people who call themselves sovereign citizens. You're not a sovereign and you're not a citizen, because you are not sovereign. God is sovereign over us. Okay, we get our rights from God. Therefore, we owe our duties to God, and we get our remedies from God, which is common law. Okay? So, sui juris means of legal age and capable of managing one's own affairs. Okay? That is more important than calling yourself a national. You have to realize who you are. You have to come to age of majority. You have to be able to manage your own affairs, self-govern. It's all about self-governing here. Okay? We want to separate ourselves from the federal government. You can call me an anti-federalist. I will wear that badge with an honor. I believe that the federal government was put in to control the people, control the population. And they basically bowled over states' rights. And now every time you see state of something, state of California, state of New York, that's federally run. That's not state run. So we'll get into more of that later. But just briefly, how I discovered what a national was, because it was the foundation I needed to take me on the journey and help me continue on the journey and to be able to self-govern. So first there was the voter fraud, then because I was a voter poll worker, and I was a voluntary observer. So I saw the fraud firsthand, like completely. That really bummed me out. It made me feel helpless. It made me feel out of control. The whole January 6th thing, I was there. And it really woke me up to the fact that something doesn't quite smell or pass the smell test. So I needed to then deep dive and go further. It just so happens I came to a people's rights meeting where John was speaking, and he kind of opened the door up into what a national was. And I took that, I ran with it, and then I got on Roger's show. I started doing a lot of research all the way back to the 13th and 14th Amendment, because that's where everything started. That's when things kind of went downhill. And so he gave a really, really good foundation for me, because I deep dived into the 13th Amendment, the fact that we have three 13th Amendments out there. Nobody knows that. We had one that basically kicked all lawyers and anyone with a title like Esquire or whatever. They would kick them out of the country. They weren't allowed to be in Congress. They created the War of 1812. They ended up getting rid of that illegally, but it was printed. Hundreds of copies were printed with this 13th Amendment in there. And then the Civil War came, and they took that 13th Amendment out. And then Lincoln was going to put in a new 13th Amendment, basically stating that if the South just joins the Union, they promise not to interfere in state law at all, no matter what, even for slavery. But here we are told that the war was fought over slavery. It wasn't. So there's just like all these lies that I kept finding out more and more the more I researched. And that rabbit hole goes very, very deep. I believe that there are three chains that bind us to the federal government. One is your citizenship status. The other is your birth certificate. And the third is your Social Security number. So your citizenship covers the jurisdiction. Does the federal government have jurisdiction over you or not? The birth certificate is the contract that brought you into this contract with the federal government for them to rule over you. The third was a Social Security number, which is a tracker / trust for you. Now, the birth certificate, this rabbit hole went very, very deep. So the birth certificate is actually a bill of lading for you. You are a product. You are actually, you're not only a product, but you are a corporation. You are not a living, breathing soul with that birth certificate. What you are is you are a corporation with a commercial value. How it works is when the mother has the baby, the mother basically signs off on the certificate of live birth. And then what happens is the mother takes the baby and ends up leaving the infant. Now, the placenta is actually the dead infant, which a corporation, what is it? Corpse. You are a corpse. And what they did is they tricked you into thinking that you were that person on that piece of paper. You're not. That is a public you, a public corporate you, but there's also a private you that is a living, breathing human being with a soul, but they don't want you to exert that. That's why when people go into court, they aren't supposed to answer to their name. You say, I may have gone by that name. I've gone by that name a couple of times, but that name is not my name. And so so when the mother takes the baby, it abandons the infant. So what happens when a child gets abandoned? The state has to come in and take control of the child, right? He has to take care of the child. He has to have money to take care of that child, which that comes into the Social Security number. Now, the Social Security number is a SESTA-K trust, or what people know as a SESTA-K trust. So the government steps in, takes custody over the infant, creates the trust, and now you are tracked and pledged to the government. Okay? Then the Social Security comes in, and they've created the SESTA-K trust. Now, in the document that I handed out, there is an explanation of like how much money they put into the SESTA-K when you get born and all this kind of stuff. I don't really know how true that is, but I do know that there is a trust and it does have money. And I'm going to show you proof of that. Your Social Security is actually social insurance for the Federal Reserve. Okay? It's your labor that matters. Not you, not your number, your labor. So that's why when you sign a promissory note, it's the signature that has the value. So when you give your Social Security number to someone for, say, a credit check, you're actually giving them access to your SESTA-K trust. So anyone you give your Social Security number to is actually your employer, sort of. And then it allows these companies to actually double dip. So not only are they taking from your SESTA-K, they're asking you to pay a certain amount of money. Okay? And if you're doing a loan, they also want interest. So this is another prison system to keep you under control, to keep you in debt, because it is a chain that binds you to the system. And the more stuff you need to have, the more the government's going to get control over you, because you're going to need to take out a loan for that stuff. So you need to ask yourself how free you want to be. Because it's really all in your hands. If you just want to go the jurisdictional route, you can stop. That's totally fine. You can still play in the system. You can still, you know, pay debt and all this kind of stuff. Or you can take it a step further and authenticate your birth certificate and try to get control over that. Or you can take it even further and turn in your basically stop paying into your Social Security system. This is everybody decides how far they want to go. It's up to you. So the government is kind of like a casino, Okay, the house always wins. Occasionally, there'll be a big winner that escapes with the money. But when that happens, what does the house do? They figure out how that person won, and then they lock down and make the rules even stricter. That's what's going on here. So when someone finds a way out, most likely what they do is they make you sign an NDA. And then you can't talk about it to anybody. Okay? That's why it's so difficult, because people have freed themselves, but they can't say anything of how they went about freeing themselves. There's a bunch of different processes, methods to use to free yourself. Some of them work, some of them don't. Sometimes they work for a whole bunch of people, and then for one person, it just doesn't. So when you do this, when you decide, okay, you know what? I want to be free. I want to be free of the federal government. I don't want them having any more chains on me. You have to understand the risks that are involved in that, because you could be thrown into jail. You could have your house taken from you, your car taken from you. But freedom isn't free. You have to decide how far you want to go with this. And really what you need is education, you need knowledge, and you need some plain old guts. What I learned on my journey was that everything comes down to contract and trust. Trusts. So when an officer pulls you over, it's all about contract. You don't even, honestly, you don't even need to be a national to get out of a ticket. You just need to realize it's a contract that they're making with you. So if you say, sir, I do not want to go into contract with you. I am not in your jurisdiction, because FYI, everybody here is a national. If you were born, let me preface this. If you were born in the United States, you're already a national. We've already proven this. I'm going to show you. Okay, so I did a FOIA Privacy Act request to the United States Citizenship. United States Citizenship and Immigration Department. Okay. I asked them one question, and I gave them a whole bunch of different set of names. Don Barry, Barry Don Kathleen Barry, Barry Don Kathleen, all these different uppercase, lowercase, all this kind of stuff, right? I said, do you have any record of this person showing any record showing that I am or was a U.S. citizen? We have no records showing you as a U.S. citizen. Okay, we're already nationals. The problem is we've been calling ourselves U.S. citizens this whole entire time. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead. It's a state of mind. This whole U.S. national, U.S. citizen, it's all a state of mind. Who are you? That's what you have to ask yourself. I'm a citizen of heaven. I'm not of this earth. You've got no jurisdiction over me, Mr. Federal Government. So you can't just say that and then expect them to go, okay, I'm going to let you go. No, you need to know the law. You need to know the UCC codes. You need to be able to quote it to them. You need to have paperwork with you always in your car that you can hand it to them. There are many ways of doing this. You can get an assumed name certificate. And I got one from the Minnesota Secretary of State. And what that does is it basically says, hey, I'm in control of this all caps name. And then all these assumed names, these holder names under here, and those are different ways of writing your name. All of those, if if any of those names are written down on a contract, a government contract, or a state contract or federal contract, all you have to do is just say, I own that name. Here's my fee schedule. If you want a contract with me, these are my fees. So it's $25,000 for my signature. It's, you know, $100,000 if you want to take my car. It's if you want to, you know, detain me. You could go, okay, it's $50 for every 5 minutes that you detain me on the side of the road. So, and I will be giving you a bill. So these are, there's so many different ways of handling, like, the right to travel, and of handling your debts, of handling your affairs. It's just having the guts to take the chance. And that's what my group kind of does. It basically goes out, tries a method. If it works, then what we do is we have somebody else who wants to try it. If that works, then we know we're on to something. And then we have somebody else try it. And the more people succeed with that exact same method, the more we know we're on to something and that it probably will work across the board. But there's always that off chance officer who's got an attitude, you know, or a judge who's super corrupt or whatever. So you've got to understand these things that you're coming up against. Now, here are some bits of information regarding, okay, so regarding your birth certificate. So here, Anderson's Law Dictionary, 1889, the definition for birth, it says, see abandon. For the definition for infant is a person under the age of a legal capacity, a minor. Infancy, the status of one who has not attained his majority, minority, non-age. An infant has a mind, but it is immature, insufficient to justify his assuming a binding obligation. He can do no legal act that will bind him except enter into an apprenticeship contract for necessaries and teaching and perhaps enlist in the Army or Navy. That's an infant. How can an infant register in the Army or Navy? This goes deeper than just words. Like words, they do wordplay very, very, very well. Okay? You have to know the legal definitions of these words to know what you're up against. So, Black Law's Dictionary, 10th edition, the definition of dummy. A party who has no interest in a transaction but participates to help achieve a legal goal. A party who purchases property and holds legal title for another, aka a straw man. This is the position that we're all playing, is this dummy. Until you become age of majority and take over your affairs. Until you show that you have the knowledge to take the trust, the Sestakea trust, take control over it, you're going to have your public trust and your private trust. That is the best way to protect yourself. Again, now, not only do you have to learn about contract law, now you have to learn about trust law. This isn't for the faint-hearted. Like, you absolutely need knowledge to be able to succeed in this and to truly, truly free yourself. But they've all tricked us into thinking that we're free and we're not. Okay, and then 18 USC code. A vessel of the United States is defined as the term vessel of the United States is used in this title. Means a vessel belonging in whole or in part to the United States or any citizen thereof or any corporation created by or under the laws of the United States or of any state territory, district, or possession thereof. So we're vessels. We're dummy vessels. Okay. So I really recommend that you guys read over the document that I gave you here. This is how they use words to confuse us, to trick us, to deceive us. And it really starts to make sense, especially if you're going to go into court. Like, all these words mean something. The judge is not a judge. He's not there to see to that there isn't any crime. He's there as a banker. He's basically, like, the warrant is money. That's a debt instrument. So, speaking of debt instruments, I said I was going to prove to you that there is a Sestake trust. All right, so I'm going to pass these around. I got 4 parking tickets. One pretty much after the other. I'm not used to parking on the street, and my garage was not accessible, so I had to park out in the street for like 5 months. So I got ticket after ticket after ticket, because we have one side that's permit, one side that isn't, but then we've got street cleaning on one day and street cleaning on the other, and so it was just a nightmare. And then I forgot to put my registration tags on, even though I had them. So I ended up getting 2 tickets for parking in a permit when I didn't have a permit. I got 1 ticket for keeping my car on the side where the street sweeper was supposed to come. And I got a 4th ticket because I didn't have my registration tag showing. Okay. So what I did was I took those tickets. Now, if you do this within 72 hours, you will have no issues. Okay. Mine, I didn't realize about this whole thing until like 3 weeks after the fact. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to throw a Hail Mary and I'm just going to try it. So let me preface this by saying I did weaponize my affidavit. Okay. So the affidavit that you send to the U.S. Secretary of State, you will also send to your, you know, LAPD, the sheriffs, highway patrol. You're going to send them to the district attorney. You're going to send them to attorney general, FBI, the guns people. I can't remember. ATF. And the DMV. Highly recommend you send it to the DMV. Now, the DMV is going to send you back a stupid letter, unsigned, by the customer service department, basically saying that you don't have a right to travel, that it is a privilege given to you by the state of California. So that is a big fat lie, and we know it's a big fat lie because they never signed the letter. And that's first key number one. When they send you a letter and it's unsigned, you know you've hit a nerve. And they're coming back with lies. So when I sent my affidavit, they basically said, and all I said was, you know, put this on my administrative file. That's all I said. I didn't say I was rescinding my driver's license. I didn't say I wasn't going to register my car. I didn't say anything. But they sent me back a nasty letter. Okay. I sent them another letter saying how they were big fat liars. And I gave them all the codes and all the laws. And that's another thing. If you're going to do the right to travel, know the codes. Know the California statutes and codes. Throw it back in their face. Because there is a code that says that a car is a motor, or a motor vehicle is something that you use to transport goods that you're using commercially. It says a house car is not a motor vehicle. Okay. So you will use these codes against them when they pull you over. So what I did here was I basically wrote no contract. I signed my name and then I put All rights reserved, without prejudice, UCC 1-308. I did it on the front of the ticket. I did it on the back of the ticket. I did a cover letter, basically, and added my affidavit and said, I'm out of your guys' jurisdiction. Unless you can prove that I harmed somebody or somebody's property, you have no jurisdiction over me. Sent that in, registered mail, or is it certified? I think certified or registered. Either one of those is good, but preferably registered. Then what happened was one of the tickets came back and it said, oops, we made a mistake. We're going to go ahead and dismiss this ticket. So I was like, okay, that's strange. Didn't tell me what that mistake was, but okay. Next ticket, I said that I wanted to appeal in writing, and because of jurisdictional reasons, they ended up coming back with the letter basically stating they've reviewed my appeal. I am guilty of what they said. And basically, I needed to pay the below amount, or, you know, I was under whatever UCC code or USC code, and I'd be in violation of it, blah, blah, blah. Well, I look below, it's zeros. I'm supposed to pay back $0. Then that happened on two tickets. Then the fourth ticket, I was telling them, I wanted to appeal in person. Well, she's like, you can't appeal in person. You have to pay, and then you can appeal. Well, they want you to pay because as soon as you write that check, you contract with them. So I was like, why would I pay to appeal? That makes no sense. So she said, well, if you don't pay it, if you don't pay it, you can't appeal, and you're going to be in violation, and your ticket's going to go up double. And I said, why would I pay you when you already took the money out using my Social Security number? Ma'am, we don't do that here. Okay, you may not think you do that, but you do that. So then I ended up then calling, and the online, and if I hadn't paid by a certain date, I think it was like January 7th, that it would double. Well, I ended up calling the automated line, and it said that your ticket's closed and no further action is needed. And I went, huh? And I never got anything in the mail. So I called them up on Monday and I spoke to someone and I said, what's going on? That says the ticket's closed, but I need something in writing telling me this. And she said, the ticket wasn't closed. It was paid off. It was paid off. I didn't pay it. You didn't pay it? Well, if you didn't pay it and it was paid by mistake, you're going to have to pay it or you're going to be in trouble. I said, no. I know who paid it, but I didn't pay it and I'm going to need some evidence to say that it was paid. And she goes, well, I can't give you, I can't tell you who paid it. I can't tell you how much was paid. I can tell you the date it was paid. It was paid July 11th. So after the time amount, so they had doubled the amount and then took that money out of my SESTA-K. Okay. So this just proves that they double dip. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do a W-4 sandwich on them and basically get the IRS involved. Now, the IRS isn't all bad. They can actually be your friend. They can actually work with you. The W-4 is another process. Again, you don't need to be a national to do it. But I do recommend, and the fact is that you guys, you're already a national. What you need to do is send the affidavit to say, hey guys, I know I've been marking myself as a U.S. national this entire time, but I just realized I'm not a U.S. national, a U.S. citizen. I'm a national. And so I'm also like a citizen of God. If you want to go there, then you can put in scriptures to back that up. So I do recommend that people send in the affidavit to the U.S. Secretary of State. I do not recommend that people send that with their passport anymore. it, especially if you're using the copper stills moonshine process, that if you do that alone and just send it in the way he tells you to fill it out, you will get that do not detain that everyone's looking for on your passport card, which will make it a lot easier when an officer pulls you over. Then you don't have to get into this whole back and forth and, you know, possibly have him pissy at you and pull you out of the car, arrest you and throw you into prison. So it's much easier that way. You could just hand it to him, say, I don't have a driver's license, but here's my passport card. I'm a traveler. I'm just going from A to B. I'm not doing any kind of commercial stuff on the road right now. Now, if you are an Uber driver, you definitely need a driver's license. You definitely, if you're doing any kind of delivery service, you absolutely need a driver's license. But again, there are ways around the driver's license to, like, there have been little things, like if you write all rights reserved instead of your signature, that's a big helpful thing. But the problem is most DMVs won't allow you to do that. They want you to do your actual signature, not all rights reserved. But if you can get away with that, that's really good, because then you have control over your driver's license and your contract. But so anyways, that in itself really opened my eyes to realize that there is such a thing as a SESTA-K account. There is a trust. And the Labor Department, the Social Security Administration, the Treasury, and the Public Health, they are the four trustees on that SESTA-K account. And it says so. If you go to the Social Security Administration website, it tells you who the trustees are. So with that, I think maybe I'll see if anyone has any questions. I do have, if anyone wants to learn how to do tax per Q mailings, which is basically you're becoming your own postmaster, and you will just maybe pay for 6 cents, $1.06 to mail something certified, registered mail. I can show you, I have what it looks like, the envelope on what it looks like, the firm book that you'll need to keep track of everything that you're mailing. But when if you're going to do this, you're going to be doing a lot of mailings to a lot of different people, and it can get really pricey. So what I've done, I've figured out a method. So pretty much all my mail has been going through, for barely anything. What would normally cost anywhere from $8 to $16 is now costing me $1.08. So that's it. Does anybody have any questions?
Let me come up for just a second. Okay, folks, so we're going to have a Q&A period with Dawn. I'm sure you have lots and lots of questions. So please come up and line up over here on the right. We've got a mic over here on the right, and ask your questions from there. And we'll go on for about a half an hour with Q&A. And if you could please limit yourself to actual questions, because after this period, we're going to have an open mic session. So then you can say whatever you want. You can go on a big, long diatribe if you want. And that's the time when we're going to do that. So if you have any questions, line up over here on the right, and Don will hopefully be able to answer. And if not, we'll do the best we can. So anyway, give it just a second, and we'll start with the Q&A.
Hello.
Hi. You have here the... when we're on the land, so what you're saying is under the courtroom that the land is ecclesiastical law.
Yes. I believe the land, that's where the ecclesiastical common law resides, is on the land.
What exactly is ecclesiastical law?
That is a good question. It basically is the law of the Bible, and where they got common law from. That is what I was told. Okay. Like I said, there's so much out there. I haven't really got into contract law, trust law. I know the gist of what it means and what it is, but I can't get into specifics because I'm doing like a lot. I have a lot of balls in the air that I'm trying to work on doing methods and procedures and stuff like that. But I can't get too much into the law, the legal side of things.
So you don't know the law of the land?
I know the gist of the law of the land.
Okay, what is the law of the land?
Well, why don't you tell me, since you seem to know.
Well, I do.
Okay.
And I dare say that I'm the only one here who is really qualified looking at this to determine what it is. Anyway, the supreme law of the land, it's the law of the land, is the supreme law of the land, and the supreme law of the land is the Constitution, so it has nothing to do with ecclesiastical law. That's a different law. Did you know that?
I do know the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Yes, I do know that.
Okay. So when you have here about the law of the land and ecclesiastical law, you're mixing jurisdictions. You're mixing law.
That could be true, because I was actually taking that straight from somebody else and writing it down.
He said, she said.
So.
Because knowing the law like I do, you have to quote so where I can go and look up something. It has to have some authority somewhere. So like when you quote that you have the right to a contract, you have to have an authority for that. Do you know where that is?
What do you mean by having authority?
To read the law so you can quote that you have the right to contract.
Well, everybody has the right to contract.
Well, that's not my question. I said, where do you find it? There has to be a place to find it.
What, the right to contract?
Yeah.
I believe there's a UCC code somewhere in there that covers that, but everything is a contract. The Bible is a contract. So we all, me talking to you, that's a contract. I'm allowing you to ask me questions. I'm contracting with you.
Okay, well, anyway, what I'm referring to is when you talk about the supreme law of the land being the Constitution, and the right to contract is in Article 1, Section 10, that's the source that you can look up and read, and that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So you don't have any of that here, and so to have something meaningful, you have to have some quote to read the source of law so you can read how it reads.
Yes, I do agree with that.
Okay.
Yep.
Hello. Hi. You use the term sestike. How do you spell that?
It's C-E-S-T-U-I-Q-U-E.
Got it. Thank you.
Oh, that was easy. Thank you.
So this is obviously a very complicated subject, and I thank you for trying to shed some light on some of it. I'm in the process of sending out my notices to all the various entities, and I'm at the point where I can do a FOIA request to see that the Secretary of State actually has me listed in my file as a national. So can you shed any light on that? Has anybody done that successfully? And can you talk about that?
Okay, so there is a difference, guys, between a FOIA and a Privacy Act request. Okay, so FOIA requires is information that you are collecting on the government, and a Privacy Act is information you're requesting that the government has on you. So there is such a thing as the Privacy Act of 1974. I would suggest everybody read that. It's not that long of a act thing. I believe that also has in there that a federal government cannot deny you any kind of benefit, such as a passport, for not revealing your social security number. So I had some issues with my passport. The first time I did it, I did a renewal. Well, that's not going to really do anything. It has to be, you have to fill out a DS-11 and do a totally new passport. Even if you have a passport that's good for another 9 years, because there's a specific way that you have to fill it out to be able to get that do not detain. When I did that, I actually sent the copper mill with my affidavit, with the evidence showing that I'm not a U.S. citizen. And they wrote me back and basically denied me and said, we see that you are a U.S. citizen, and we only give U.S. citizen passports, so you need to let us know what to do. So I realized I made actually a couple really big boo-boos on the application. So I told them, I wrote them back, and I said, hey, I need you to correct these things that I noticed I have issues with. You can go ahead and remove the affidavit. You can remove the other document with it and reprocess it. You've already cashed my check, so you've already contracted with me to get my passport. So we're going to see where that lies. Has anyone ever done a FOIA Privacy Act on their stuff from the U.S. Secretary of State? I have heard of somebody up north in California that has done that. It came in a really beautiful folder with a big gold star on it saying U.S. Secretary of State. And he was able to see that they actually wrote sovereign citizen on the edge of his passport application. So he took that with him to the Social Security Administration office and said, I want to stop paying and I want the money like that is already in there. I want it. I don't know whatever came of that. I heard him on Roger's show talk about that, and then I did a little side email back and forth. It does take forever for them to get back to you. You have to be on top of them. Sometimes you even have to threaten them to and use the Privacy Act. Like, this is where knowing the law and knowing these acts comes in real handy, because you can quote them. And they have to give you these documents in a reasonable time. And so, you know, I would hate to think that you're committing fraud, blah, blah, blah. Like, you have to ratchet it up. And sometimes, like, he had to threaten them that they were committing fraud by not giving him his records. So he did have to go through a lot of steps to get it, but eventually he did. And I would recommend, when you get it back, recording it with your county recorder and making sure, because the judge is the ears of the court. The judge is the ears. The court or the county clerk or a recorder is the voice, because when you put things in with them, they announce it to everybody. And then there's a third one I can't remember. But the judge listens. That's all he can do. He can't give advice. He can't do anything. He can just listen. But there's a third one. I can't remember what it was.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you so much. It's been really great listening to you. I do want to go through the process and become a sovereign national, and I will be doing that before the end of the year. A question that occurred to me was that I have some IRS tax debt. It's now down to about $3,000 because most of it is past the 10-year statute of limitations, thank God. but I've heard that they will not issue a passport if you owe money to the IRS. Can you tell me if that's correct? And if it is, what can I do about it?
I have heard that as well. I don't know if there's like... I don't know if $3,000 would be considered like do or die. I would submit it anyways and just see. trying to think if anyone on Roger's show had said that they owed and still got a passport. I can't remember. But yes, that technically it is true. However, I would just go ahead and do it anyways and see what they got.
Guy behind me said it's okay for me to ask one more question. You're so nice. Thank you so much. So, for a variety of reasons, I started back at work about 6 months ago in May this year, and I have had virtually no taxes taken out of my check. And so I'm hoping that becoming a national this year will help rescue me from that, but I don't know. Do you know anything about that? Will they still come after me for taxes for this year?
So
is it prorated to the date when you become a national, or is there anything like that?
It is actually, you need to do it within the year that you're claiming yourself exempt. Like, I made it just under the wire. I had claimed myself exempt in, like, I think it was 2021. And then I found out about the national stuff in December and filed it right away with the U.S. Secretary of State, sent a copy to the IRS commissioner, and basically just let him know he doesn't have jurisdiction. Here's the thing, guys. Your labor is, it can't be taxed. Its rights can't be taxed. You have the right to get money to sustain your livelihood. Okay? They have tricked us into thinking that we have to pay taxes. The thing is that when you do this, you have to know the law if you're going to do this, because if you do it and then they come after you, you can't fold like a cheap suit. You've got to be able to stand your ground and say no, and these are the reasons why you cannot tax my labor. Now, can they tax anything? Yeah, there's certain things that they can absolutely tax. They can tax assets, benefits that they give you. They can tax that. 401k, they can tax that. I never thought that the 401k had anything to do with the government. It has everything to do with the federal government. Federal government set that up, just along with our Social Security. So they can't tax a right. They can tax benefits, though. So just write yourself exempt and then take it from there.
Hey. Hi there. Nice to hear from you again. Yeah. Something new today you're talking about is this copper mill.
Copper Steel's moonshine method. He has a website, and I can probably like bring it up on the phone and show you where it's at. He has a business selling copper moonshine mill or stills, and then in all these different things that you can buy from him, there's a little information. There's a little thing you can press, and it shows you how to fill it out, and it gives you a template and everything. It's super easy. He tells you to put in your Social Security number anyways, because it's just going to hold up the process. However, the thing is that what ties you into being a U.S. citizen is that birth certificate and that Social Security number. Because that made you a corporation, and all corporations are controlled by the federal government. So it's like having a license. That birth certificate is like having a license for a corporation. Yeah. So when you're submitting that, it's like they are technically right. You are a U.S. citizen. The one with the birth certificate attached to it with the Social Security number you wrote down in there, that's tied to your U.S. citizenship status. However, presumption, what is that? I can't think of the saying. Basically, so nothing on your birth certificate says you're a U.S. citizen, but that Social Security number absolutely does. So you can say, well, nothing on that birth certificate said I was a U.S. citizen, so that documentation, and let you know, admit to me that documentation, you're trying to get them to admit.
Yeah, we want to rebut.
Yeah. So if you want to call me a U.S. citizen, then admit to me that birth certificate is tied as a corporation and tied to the corporation, which is this all caps name, which that's not me. Like the Social Security card, if you look on it, it says if it's lost, who to give it to? Give it to you? No. It says give it to the Social Security Administration office because they own it. So it's not ours. They've just given it to us to act as the registered agent. But the problem is when you go into court, they all of a sudden make you the trustee of the account and make you liable. What you have to do is when you go into court, you have to come in as the registered agent. That's not me, Your Honor. I'll give you my social... I'll give you this Social Security card and it show you it doesn't belong to me. Are you saying it belongs to me? And these are things I'm doing a live tonight on Telegram about right to travel, and we're going to do a little role playing. And I gave people homework to answer questions that a cop would say to you and give at least 3 responses. And then we're going to do a little role play tonight. So I told them always answer a question with another question. That's the best way to catch them.
So I just wanted to make a comment and give you this back.
Oh, thank you.
Dawn's contact information is available on the People's Rights website in the newsroom. There's becoming a national class posting, and Dawn is on the west side of L.A., and John Kasarab is out in Riverside, so he's kind of the east side. So obviously, if you want to learn about this, because it's a very complex subject, you can go on and contact Don if you're closer to the west side, or John if you're closer to the east side, and take a class, because you're going to need a class before you get some understanding of all this. But Don, what in your opinion is the big advantage of becoming or reclaiming your national status? Yeah.
Empowerment, knowing who you are and being able to stand and tell someone else that you aren't who they say you are. Because we've been feeling so much out of control with, you know, the way that they're doing the voting and all this kind of stuff and, you know, taking away rights and privileges and stuff. And it's, you start to feel as though you're out of control. But when I first learned about the national status, I was like jumping in, you know, head first. And I did it because I felt, after taking John's class, I actually felt empowered. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. I can take matters into my own hands now. I don't have to listen to them, like, with everything. Like, yeah, I have to listen to the laws because the laws keep everybody safe. But, you know, if I am not hurting somebody else or hurting their property, then, you know, leave me alone. And I can say that. I can say leave me alone. But it's very daunting because you start to lose conveniences. You can't, you know, I don't know, do things that you normally could. Like, I've got to try and find a different, like a 98 EIN number and then create this bank account. And then you've got to separate your private from your public. And how do I do that? And I mean, you get bombarded with all this stuff that you feel as though you're being weighed down because you have to do it. But the thing is that you don't all have to do it right this second. You can take your time. And that is something I've learned along the way. Don't ever jump into something, especially if it sounds good, because it's usually too good to be true. Right. But take steps to get the knowledge, educate yourself, because that's going to be your greatest asset in all of this.
Okay. Can you tell us how to get involved in your Telegram group and what you're actually doing with your meetings and how the folks that don't know about all this can get involved with you directly?
Yeah, so these things, these handouts that I gave to everybody, they actually have my my Telegram link to it, and it also has, like, if you're already a part of Telegram and you just want to search for me, it has the picture of the name. It's just National USA. But I would recommend going into, like, the an internet search bar and then typing in that address. Don't go into Telegram and type it in. It's so confusing, but just go into the internet, type that in, and then it will connect you to the channel. Just make sure you have Telegram already downloaded on your phone. And like I said, I do live Sunday calls at 6 o'clock, this our 6 o'clock time. And it's usually about 2 hours long where I answer every question that I can. I can't always answer all questions, but sure. Like this time we're doing role playing. So hopefully someone will step up and want to role play, because last time they were like, oh, I don't want to do it. So hopefully the homework will help them out.
Yeah. You mentioned how they handled your objections to their parking tickets. And I had a similar thing happen to me in relation to a traffic ticket, which I got 2 years ago. And I contested it, and they wanted me to wear a mask in court.
Oh, yeah.
And I told them that I would not. Mm-hmm. And basically, the same kind of thing happened because there is no law backing up what they're doing. So basically, to make a long story short, they dismissed my ticket. So if you know this stuff that Don and John and all of us are trying to teach and learn about ourselves, you can really defend yourself well.
Yeah.
So
just learning how to stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
And holding them to it, like not budging, because it's very intimidating for them to, like, you know, come up against you and say, well, we're going to arrest you. Okay. But you're breaking the law, and now you've just lost your, you know, amnesty. Whatever. Right. You've just lost your protection, and now I can go after you civilly. But you have to know what you're you can't just say that and not really know what you're talking about. So do the research before you. But the more you know, the more you're empowered to actually stand up for yourself and take it to the end. So.
So thank you very much, Don. Does anyone else have any questions before we go to the open mic period? Yeah. Okay. We got a couple questions.
Okay.
Yeah. When you mentioned the do not detain, I perked up. I was like, because I'm in the process of getting ready to do this myself.
So oh, okay.
Could you go into a little bit more detail on that?
So basically, everyone who's done his method to the T and hasn't deviated at all, they have had that do not detain. They've been speeding along the road. A cop pulls them over, hands them the passport card. He goes back. He'll probably ask, what is this? Just say it's a passport card. Just run it as an ID. He'll go back. He'll run it. If he's a good cop and he actually follows the law, then he will hand it back to you and go, okay, what is this? What did you do? Like, you have a do not detain. Like, one guy actually had that happen to him, where a cop actually had him back, come into his car, sit down in the front seat, and tell him, like, he's like, what is this? Like, how did you get that? And so he sat down and talked with him. And it's about educating the cops, too, because they don't know. Like, their education is compartmentalized as well, and they aren't allowed to know everything. Like, they uphold the, quote, law, but they don't know the law. They don't teach them that, and they don't teach them it on purpose, because they want them just to do their job, just to do what they're being told to do and not question it. And so when we get pulled over, we cannot be belligerent. Even if the cop is belligerent, you know, you have to keep your cool. You have to be friendly but firm and hand them the information and then try to educate them. And just, like, even if they're getting really rude with you and obnoxious, you just have to de-escalate, because that's going to keep you from being thrown in the hood of their car and cuffed and thrown in the back squad. And it's not good. So we're here. They've also had these watchdog, sovereign citizen watchdog things that the FBI has going on. They actually go to police stations and train them how to deal with a sovereign citizen. Okay, you can't be sovereign and a citizen, for one. So next time, like, if a cop asks me, are you a sovereign citizen? I'm going to say, are you a Freemason? Like, what kind of question is that?
So it's the copper method. So I need to...
Copper stills method. Yeah, I'll get together with you and show you the link so you can connect with that and look at it. And,
oh, fantastic. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Don.
Hey.
Good to see you again.
Hi.
Hi. My question is, what is the most common mistake that people make when in the process of becoming nationals that gets them into trouble with, well, the law that applies to citizens?
The main thing that gets them into trouble is they think that the law doesn't apply to them. It does. They think they get a little too cocky when confronted, and they don't really know their position. They don't know the law themselves, and they act as though they do, and that's what gets them into trouble. Because you're telling a cop, well, I'm a national, and he's like, what the heck is that? Like, that isn't even a thing. And so they can always, like, they have the codes in the back of their head. You need to have the codes to come back at them and say, no, but code da 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 says this, doesn't it? So it's the lack of knowledge that a person has, but they act like they have all the knowledge in the world, but they really don't. And so they project themselves as being untouchable, and you're not untouchable. Cop can always, like, forego the law and stick you in a squad car and put you into prison or jail for like 3 days and not, you know, give you the worst cell ever and all this kind of stuff. So this is why, you know, people get belligerent about being a national. And we're not supposed to be belligerent. We're supposed to be helping each other. That even means helping the cop, helping the judge understand, you know, that at least to tell them, you know, the jig is up, like, you know, the game. So, but you have to also know the rules of the game, and you just can't go out spouting all this stuff without having the information to back it up. So that's the biggest problem I see.
So I guess, are you saying that the biggest problem is in the process of becoming a national, they think, okay, well, it doesn't apply to me, but is it safe to say that the law for citizens does apply until they become a national?
Well, here's the thing, is that everything, like I said, everything is contract. And so you have to agree to be under certain rules. Like, there's the law, there's lawful things, and then there's legal things. Two totally separate things, okay? Legal means man-made. They just made it up and on a whim. And, like, the statutes, codes, and regulations for driving and stuff, no. That is a legal law that you have to agree to. If you don't agree to it, they can't get you. So
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay. So ladies and gentlemen, let's say thanks to Don Berry for talking to us today. Thank you, Don. Fantastic. Okay, so we're going to open up the mics now for anybody that has anything they want to say. Any diatribes, any treatises, any poetry readings, or whatever you would like. You can step up to the mic and say something right now. So I'll start by talking about my adventures in Ticketland with the police. So I have, over the years, I've helped people contest their tickets. And I've gotten a few over the years myself. And I've contested, now my count is up to 10 separate tickets. And I can tell you that if you just show up and you contest and you try to put up a fight, you're almost certainly going to win. Because I've won 9 out of 10. And the one I lost, it was basically because I ran against a judge that was just totally unfair and was just there to collect money, and that was it. So I could have appealed that, but, you know, you got to pick your battles. But anyway, contesting tickets, because tickets are all about revenue, and this is one of the interesting differences between common law and the commercial law that they're trying to impose on us. Commercial law, they create, they call tickets infractions, okay? Because there's no crime, really. If you're speeding, there's no injured party, there's no damage to property for just speeding. So speed itself is not a crime. But they try to lead you to believe that it is so that they can charge you a fee. But have you ever considered that when the cop pulls you over, he has to speed to catch up to you to write you the ticket? Okay? So isn't the cop also speeding and breaking the law if that is a law?
Absolutely.
So you see where I'm going. But anyway, so if you want to get involved with what Don is teaching and what John is teaching, like I said, go to the People's Rights website. There is a newsroom there, and you can find their information in the newsroom under Becoming a National is the name of the article. So anyone else have anything they want to say? Come on up.
Yeah, what you just said earlier, there's no, you forgot about injury to person. There's no injury to person or damage to property. So according to the common law, there's no crime. That's what caused me to come up and say what I just said. So it took me a little while to get up here, and you're on to the next subject, and so I wasn't timely for that.
So I guess that will conclude the meeting unless anybody else wants to come up and say anything. Thanks, everybody, for coming. So Disorganized Mayhem, enjoy yourselves and mingle, and we'll call that the conclusion of the meeting. Thank you.